What's going on, everybody? This is Justin. This is a creepypasta episode, alright? Now, when I did my Halloween episode and I read some true listener-submitted scary stories, or ghost stories for that matter, somebody brought it to my attention that maybe I should do little side bonus episodes of creepypastas. So, I decided to do just that. Some of these are listener-submitted. Actually, one of them will be listener-submitted. The other two will be read by me that I found off the internet. If I know who wrote them, or it's acknowledged who wrote them, I will mention that. If not, then I won't. So, well, before I get started, I would like to say, Ashley, this is definitely dedicated to you. I know you're going to be needing to waste a little bit of time tomorrow. You're going to have some, you know, spare time or whatever. So I just want you to know that I wish your daughter the best. I wish you and your family the very best. So with that being said, this one is referred to as the Smiling Man. About 5 years ago, I lived downtown in a major U.S. city. I've always been a night person, so I would often find myself bored after my roommate, who was decidedly not a night person, went to sleep. To pass the time, I used to go for long walks and spend the night thinking. I spent 4 years like that, walking alone at night, and never once had a reason to feel afraid. I always used to joke with my roommate that even the drug dealers in the city were polite. But all of that changed in just a few minutes of one evening. It was a Wednesday, somewhere between 1 and 2 in the morning, and I was walking near a police-patrolled park, quite a ways from my apartment. It was a quiet night, even for a weeknight, with very little traffic and almost no person on foot. The park, as it was most nights, was completely empty. I turned down a short side street in order to loop back to my apartment when I first noticed him. At the far end of the street, on my side, was a silhouette of a man, dancing. It was a strange dance, similar to a waltz, but he finished each box with an odd forward stride. I guess you could say he was dance walking, headed straight for me. Deciding he was probably drunk, I stepped as close as I could to the road to give him the majority of the sidewalk to pass by me. The closer he got, the more I realized how gracefully he was moving. He was very tall and lanky and wearing an old suit. He danced closer still until I could make out his face. His eyes were open wide and wild, head tilted back slightly, looking off to the sky. His mouth was formed in a painfully wide cartoon of a smile. Between the eyes and the smile, I decided to cross the street before he danced any closer. I took my eyes off him to cross the empty street. As I reached the other side, I glanced back and then stopped dead in my tracks. He had stopped dancing and was standing with 1 foot in the street, perfectly parallel to me. He was facing me but still looking skyward, smile still wide on his lips. I was completely and utterly unnerved by this. I started walking again, but kept my eyes on the man. He didn't move. Once I had put about half a block between us, I turned away from him for a moment to watch the sidewalk in front of me. The street and the sidewalk ahead of me were completely empty. Still unnerved, I looked back to where he had been standing to find him gone. For the briefest of moments, I felt relieved. Until I noticed him. He had crossed the street and was now slightly crouched down. I couldn't tell for sure due to the distance and the shadows, but I was certain he was facing me. I had looked away from him for no more than 10 seconds, so it was clear that he had moved fast. I was so shocked that I stood there for some time, just staring at him. And then he started moving toward me again. He took giant, exaggerated, tiptoed steps, as if he were a cartoon character sneaking up on someone. Except he was moving very, very quickly. I'd like to say at this point I ran away or pulled out my pepper spray or my cell phone or anything at all, but I didn't. I just stood there, completely frozen as a smiling man crept towards me. And then he stopped again, about a car length away from me, still smiling his smile and looking to the sky. When I finally found my voice, I blurted out the first thing that came to mind. What I meant to ask was, "What the fuck do you want?" in an angry, commanding tone. But what came out was a whimper. I said, "What the f-" Regardless of whether or not humans can smell fear, they can certainly hear it. I heard it in my own voice. That only made me more afraid. But he didn't react to it at all. He just stood there smiling. And then, after what felt like forever, he turned around very slowly and started dance walking away. Just like that. Not wanting to turn my back to him again, I just watched him go until he was far enough away to almost be out of sight. And then I realized something. He wasn't moving away anymore, nor was he dancing. I watched in horror as the distant shape of him grew larger and larger. He was coming back my way, and this time he was running. And I ran too. I ran until I was off the side of the road and back onto a better lit road with sparse traffic. Looking behind me then, he was nowhere to be found. The rest of the way home, I kept glancing over my shoulder, always expecting to see a stupid smile, but he was never there. I lived in that city for 6 months after that night, and I never went out for another walk. There was something about his face that always haunted me. He didn't look drunk. He didn't look high. He looked completely and utterly insane, and that's a very, very scary thing to see. This next is submitted by one of my listeners, and also a very dear friend of mine, and it's by Robert Peters, and it's called The House on Foxfire Avenue. The house breathed deeply, but instead of air, it took in all the surrounding light and exhaled dark gloom around itself. An almost impenetrable wall of conscious darkness that made it appear more catacomb than home. The house hungered, but it was patient. It was so very, very patient. It was over 150 years old. A classic Victorian that looked like something out of a Stephen King novel. It was 3 stories tall, 4 if you counted the attic, with its solitary window jutting out like the eye of a cyclops. How long it had stood empty and boarded up was anyone's guess. No one seemed to remember a time that anyone had ever lived there. All of the windows were boarded up. Except for one, the attic. People naturally tended to walk on the other side of the street when passed by it, so as not to get too close. Still, the house was patient. Soon it would be Halloween, and that was like ringing the dinner bell. All the children loved to be scared, and it drew them towards it like moss to a flame. Soon the children would come, and it would welcome them, as it always did, with promises of fright and treasures galore. The boy awoke with a start. Then his heart began to slow as he realized that he was safe in his bed. The dream had already started to fade by the time he had put his shirt on. He wore his favorite shirt, a picture of the shirtless Jim Morrison adored his 12-year-old chest. Jim always made him feel better. As he got ready to go downstairs for breakfast with his mother, and the daily question and answer session that his mother would undoubtedly give him, he gave a wink to Jim and David Gilmore, who adorned his bedroom walls as posters. As he entered the kitchen, his mother was there to greet him with a welcoming smile. "Good morning, sleepyhead." "Good morning, Mom." "And how did we sleep?" "Just fine." "So how is school going, Justin? Did you make any new friends?" "School's fine. No new friends." Justin knew what it meant when she did a long pause. It was going to be a thoughtful and important question, carefully worded to show her concern and caring for him. "Justin, have you ever thought of joining some sports or other school sessions? Then you would be able to meet some new people and hopefully make some new friends." "Mom," he interjected, "I know you don't like my friends. But just because they don't fit into your scheme of things doesn't mean that they aren't good friends. You call people who make fun of you friends? Please, Mom. Could we talk about this later? I'm going to be late." She says, "Okay, I'll see you later then, Justin. But I'm not letting you off the hook." Justin left his half-eaten bowl of cereal on the table and got out of there as quick as he could before she changed her mind. His mom meant well, and so he didn't harbor any ill towards her. Since moving here 6 months ago, he had not made many friends, and his mother was quite correct that the quote-unquote friends that he did have barely qualified as a definition of the word. They loved to taunt him and bully him, mainly because Justin didn't care to do some of the juvenile crap that they liked to do. In that regard, Justin wasn't your normal 12-year-old. For his age, he was more mature than any of those kids. An old soul. He had always felt different, apart, solitary. But even a hermit required friends now and then. Justin tried his best to ignore the abuse and hoped in time that they would grow up, maybe a little bit, and maybe accept him for who he was. So Justin grabbed his school bag and headed out the back door and started his trek towards school. Each morning it was the same thing since they moved here. She was happy at first that he had made some new friends. But then that turned around when his mom had noticed how he was treated by them. David wasn't exactly what you would call his greatest friend, but he was someone to do things with and get away from home for a while. David was a leader of the group of the other three boys, Dean, Steve, and George. David wasn't a very religious soul except for one thing. He religiously refused to shower. This didn't gain him many new friends, but it did keep unwanted girls away. His parents had split up, and as long as he didn't bother them, they didn't bother him. Justin thought he was cool because he was the only kid he knew with a lock on his bedroom door. Dean was David's twin brother, except in two ways. Dean showered at least twice a week, and where David was mean, Dean was meaner. No one was really sure who was in command of the group, either Dean or David. However, one thing was certain. If the group wanted to do something that Dean didn't, then he would just leave. Sometimes the gang followed, sometimes they didn't. Either way, Dean didn't care. Steve was nervous for being the youngest brother of Bob and Tom. Bob and Tom had both been to jail and were currently involved with motorcycle gangs. But no one was sure if Steve had ever done anything. But then again, most were afraid to ask. Steve had two main facets about him. One was that he could be meaner than either David or Dean if he wanted to. This made him vice president with the option of vetoing anything the gang did, if he wanted to. Fortunately, he rarely did. Secondly, he was cute. This was proved by the fact that he was the only one in the group with a girlfriend. All of the boys' mothers loved Steve. George was the stooge of the group, the yes man. He did whatever he was told and backed up the other boys. He was a bit on the nerdy side, and small and thin. He stayed with the group because they protected him, and they let him stay because they liked having a slave. The group basically used Justin, but he didn't really mind. He hated being alone all the time, and so tolerated the abuse. Although he didn't hang out with them 100% of the time, he had better things to do most of the time. Most of his time was spent either reading or listening to classic rock. He even had a guitar in his room that he swore he was going to learn how to play someday. David Gilmore would silently stare at him from his position on his wall with silent disdain until he actually did this. "Fuck you, Dave. I know, I know." Jim Morrison, on the other hand, was much more cordial and forgiving and encouraged him to experience life for what it was. Fun and much too short. The only other person in Justin's life was his neighbor Autumn. She was 14. An older woman, they had grown close. But Justin would never admit that they were boyfriend and girlfriend. But he did like her. Autumn was a joyful and playful spirit, and smart. Damn, she was smart. Justin loved to talk to her for hours about his thoughts of the cosmos and the world. She didn't just sit there like some stupid girl and just say, "Uh-huh." No, she had input, intelligent input. And she had tits. Big ones, man. Holy shit. So on this day, he met the gang at their usual spot, the corner of Lancaster and Foxfire Avenues. Then they would walk up Foxfire until they got to Villard, and then walk the three remaining blocks to school. Each time they did this, they would eventually pass the house on Foxfire Avenue. It was the house because it was the only abandoned house on the block and was haunted, or so they liked to think. They loved to look at the old house, and always their eyes would be dragged towards the lone window at the top, the attic, that screamed to them of ghosts and murder most foul. They all joked that there was someone up there watching them as they walked to school. Each boy, though, really felt something was watching him as they passed beneath its shadows. Each had his own version of horror that was waiting outside those rotting curtains in the attic. Something dark called to each boy, in its own way, to come in and explore. Surely there would be some sort of treasure awaiting them. Each thought of exploring the old house. They went inch through inch in their minds, finding old clothes and newspapers, old knives from World War II, or perhaps even some money. But then they would finally reach the attic where the real treasure was. And that treasure would surely come with a heavy price. So the boys left after a brief discussion of the mansion. They quickly forgot about the house. All except Justin. That house would haunt his dreams. both sleeping and waking. The next day their walk was a little different. Dean, the leader that day, decided they should search the house early Saturday morning on Halloween. It was his decision, and the reason Justin wouldn't get any sleep for the next few days. For Justin would be the one to enter the house as an act of final initiation into the gang. His job was to go into the house and up to the attic and look out the window at the boys to prove that he actually went all the way into the house. Justin just stared at Dean with a look of astonishment. "Are you fucking insane, man? That's B&E. Dean just looked stupidly back. "B&E? Breaking and entering, man. I don't want to go to jail." "You fucking fucktard. I knew you'd be too scared." "I ain't scared of no house. Just ain't getting arrested." Justin shot back. "You do this or you're not part of the gang. End of discussion, fag." Justin thought for a moment. Dean could be serious. Justin didn't care that much about having to be in the gang, but the thought did displease him. He felt even if he was caught with the cops, that the cops wouldn't do too much. "Fuck." Justin looked at Dean and said, "Couldn't I just bring out something to prove I was there?" Dean snarled back, "Yeah. And bring out the nearest thing at arm's length and to the front door?" "Right." David joined in now. "The only way we'll believe that you actually went far enough in is to go into the attic and look out at us." The boys laughed at this. All Justin did was get sick to his stomach. Dean saw the other boys crackling and thought of a great way to be sure that Jim would go through with it. "And we're not going to have another thing to do with you until 3 a.m. Saturday, when we all meet here to watch you do it." Justin flinched. "Wait a minute," Dean said. "Come on, guys, let's split." They left Justin all alone there in front of the house, alone with his thoughts. And the worst thought of all was that there was a certain something in that house calling him to come in. He didn't actually hear it, but he felt it as he stared at the house thinking. He had already taken 4 steps towards the front porch when he realized that he was moving forwards. Justin turned tail and ran as fast as he could. He never turned around, but he knew he was being watched. Something in that house wanted to be his friend in the worst way. That night he spoke with Autumn about this. She was the only one he trusted. He looked at her, trying to keep his eyes from going to her tits, and said, "I just don't know what to do." She smiled a light, playful smile that made him want to kiss her right then and there. "I know what I'd do." Justin laughed. "I know too. You'd tell me to fuck off, right?" She says, "Yep. I mean, come on, Justin, it's stupid. Not to mention illegal." He says, "I thought you liked bad boys." She says, "Yeah, maybe. But that's just stupid and doesn't really gain you much." "Well, it gets me into the gang." She said, "You're already in the gang, stupid." He said, "Not according to them. Look, I know it's stupid, but they are the only so-called friends I have. And they could just be big enough pricks to ditch me over this. It is Halloween, so I don't think a cop is going to come down too hard on a kid checking out an old abandoned house." "Maybe," she said. "Look, Audie, I'll do it quick, and that will be the end of it. If they ever try to pull this part of the gang bullshit again, I will call it quits with them, okay?" "You promise?" she said with a furlong look of worry. "Yes, I promise." And with that, he kissed her. He didn't even realize he was doing it until it was over. It just seemed the right thing to do. "I've got to get going. I'll call you tomorrow." So over the following week, each night, was the same. Go to bed at 11 and roll around until 4 a.m. when he would finally go to sleep. If you could call it that. He would toss and turn as he dreamed about the house, trapped inside forever, running from something he couldn't see, until finally he made his way to the attic. As he leapt in through the door to the attic, he would run for the window with the hopes of opening it and climbing down to the outside, where it was safe. But before he could make it 3/4 of the way, he would hear the door closing behind him, and all would go dark. He could hear something slithering on the old wood floors towards him. Soon he felt the heat issuing from his body, even though he could see nothing in the dark. It was big, whatever it was. He could tell just by the way the floor creaked under it. If he could just make it to the window and call for help, or maybe a try at a getaway, but his feet were locked in cement. Closer, closer it crept, its intent clear. He felt tendrils snare around his legs, pulling him towards it. "Honey, it's time to get up," his mom said as she shook his legs. "Let's go or we'll be late." Waking up, he thought, yeah, wouldn't want to be late. It was Friday, and never did a day go faster. He used to remember how Fridays would drag in anticipation for the coming weekend. Now he wished he had met some new friends like his mom wanted. But he felt that he just had to do this. He had to show those assholes that he was better than them. He knew that he didn't really have to do it. He felt that they would probably just ignore him for a week or so, and then it would be like old times. But he just couldn't do that. If he did this, he would finally be accepted as their equal. If not, their better. If he didn't do it, he would always be the outsider, the new kid, who was a chicken. He did not eat his supper and had to make an excuse that he wasn't feeling well. He asked to be excused and went to bed early, at 8:30 or so. Oh, how the next 6 hours dragged by. He had one last talk with the boys. He looked at Jim and said, "Well, Jim, what should I do?" The poster smiled back at him. "God damn it, Jim, I know what you would do. I'm asking what I should do." "I'll forget it. Dave, what do you think?" Gilmore just stared blankly at him. "Dave? Dave, oh man. What the fuck use are you, Dave, if you're not going to help me?" To make the time go by faster, he gathered all the things that he would need. He got his flashlight and his dark raincoat. The light so he could see the coat, so he would not be seen. His mind was made up. He was going to do it, damn it. At 2:30 a.m., he opened his window and crept outside into the chilly, moonless night. He sneaked the half mile and arrived at the corner of Foxfire at 2:47. He waited here instead of going to the house because he knew his antagonists would be around here somewhere, since this was the fastest way to the house from their homes. How he wished they wouldn't show. At 2:57, he was almost sure that they were going to show when he saw some shadowy figures moving half a block away. At 2:57, he was almost sure that they weren't going to show when he saw some shadow figures moving half a block away. He hid in some bushes in case it was the police or worse. As the figures passed him, it was obvious who it was, and he revealed himself to them. Any other time, he would have leapt out at them to scare the shit out of them, but not now. He just wasn't up to it. Looking surprised, Dean said. "Glad to see you didn't check it out, Justy." God, he hated it when that moron called him that. Jim just ignored the feeble attempt at getting his goat and said, "Let's just get over with it." They crept towards the house and stopped on the lawn below the window and about 15 feet from the house. Okay, Justin, do your stuff, Dean said in a way that only a true asshole could. Without saying a word, Justin walked to the porch, and intent on not giving away his true emotions until he was safely inside the house. He stepped onto the porch and looked at the front door. It appeared to be securely boarded up at first glance. But when he looked again, he noticed a loose board. He swore that board had been securely on there a second ago. It was almost as if the house wanted to come in and was opening itself up to him. He stepped through and into the house. It took an eternity to find his flashlight and turn it on. When it finally turned on, he felt a great sigh of relief. The light was better than 1,000 security blankets, at least for the moment. He was surprised at how well he could see with so little light, but he chalked that up to his night vision kicking on. He shone his light around the room and was a little surprised, outside of it being very dusty. There wasn't anything in the room except for a chair that was covered up with old newspapers. He went to the chair and looked at the papers. The date on the paper was 1995. Hell, he thought it would say at least 1935. He was glad to know that someone else had been in there less than 30 years ago. He scanned the large living room and looked for the shortest route up the stairs. Unfortunately, he saw none. Great. That meant further searching in the house until he found it. He went into the next room with the same result. There was only another way out and one door. He opened the door and did not like what he saw. This had been the basement, but there were no steps. There weren't even any real walls. It was just dirt. He scanned with his flashlight and saw a ladder lying on his side on the floor next to the earthen wall. Why would it be down there? What if someone wanted to go down there, or up? There would be no way to get out. His mind wandered and he saw a boy at the bottom who had been a young adventurer like him, but he had decided to go down instead of up in the attic and had paid the price. He refocused his mind and blotted out the imagined image of the boy. Justin quickly turned around and shut the door for fear that someone would push him down there, or that he might hear the boy call to him. Justin found the stairs up 3 rooms later. He found no World War II weapons or money. All he found was a letter in the 3rd room pinned to the wall. The date on the letter was September 15th, 1948. The rest was worn away except for the last line, and it read, "Not that I ever read them, no. I make it a rule never to look into a newspaper." It was signed John. He kept going. He climbed all 3 sets of stairs, being careful not to touch the railing. The dust told of its age, so he did not trust them. He stayed to the edge of the wall, feeling that the steps would be sturdier there. As he reached the uppermost landing, he noticed that there was no dust on the railing there. He looked downwards and noticed that it remained thus for 4 steps, and then became dusty again. He didn't know what it meant or what to make of it, so he kept moving, ever moving. He found one door at the top. It had to be the attic. He turned the handle and it opened easily. There was no creaking of the door. He didn't know if that should concern him or not. The attic looked like his dream, but only shorter. It was only 10 feet to the window, unlike his dream where it was at least 4 times that. He started for the window, each step taking forever. His body felt 100 pounds heavier. He stayed to the center of the room, worried about what could be in the darkened corners. He was 3 feet from the window when he heard the noise. First, the bellow from beneath the house. Then, ever so slowly, He heard the door behind him start to creak. He didn't wait. He ran. He kicked the door open, hoping to either scare the thing behind it or injure it. He took 2, 3, finally 4 stairs at a time, almost spraining his ankle in the process. He ran to the door and crawled out as fast as he could, not even caring whether his friends would ridicule him for not finishing his quest. Fuck them. He looked, but didn't see them in the dark. They must have gone home, he thought. Or maybe something scared them away, like the police. No shit, well, maybe he could bullshit them tomorrow and tell them when he looked out the window, all he saw was them running like scared rabbits. Yeah, that might work. He began walking across the yard to the street, passing the spot where the boys had knelt while they were going into the house. If he wouldn't have left his flashlight on, he would have fallen in it. There, open before him, was an 8-foot round hole. He looked at it. It hadn't been there when he arrived, or else the guys would have seen it. They were standing right about there. He looked closer. Holy shit. The hole where the guys had been went down about 15 feet, about as deep as the basement had been. And then it turned and went in the direction of the house. His head slowly turned up, panning the house until he came to the attic window. There, looking down at him, with the smiles of malicious intent, were Dean, David, Steve, and George, and they waved at him. Fuck me, Justin said. No. Fuck us, Justy, gurgled Dean. Justin ran and never looked back. Monday, the police had still not found the boys. Not that they had looked that hard. Life went on, and a young man walked hand in hand with his girl to school. They took a direction several blocks out of their way. Justin didn't mind. Nope, he didn't mind at all. This next one was submitted to Reddit by user Whoever Fights Monster. And it's entitled, There's No Reason to Be Afraid. When my sister Betsy and I were kids, our family lived for a while in a charming old farmhouse. We loved exploring its dusty corners and climbing the apple tree in the backyard. But our favorite thing was the ghost. We called her Mother because she seemed so kind and nurturing. Some mornings Betsy and I would wake up, and on each of our nightstands, we'd find a cup that hadn't been there the night before. Mother had left them there, worried that we'd get thirsty during the night. She just wanted to take care of us. Among the house's original furnishings was an antique wooden chair, which we kept against the back of the wall in the living room. Whenever we were preoccupied watching TV or playing a game, Mother would inch that chair forward across the room towards us. Sometimes she'd manage to move it all the way to the center of the room. We always felt sad putting it back against the wall. Mother just wanted to be near us. Years later, long after we'd moved out, I found an old newspaper article about the farmhouse's original occupant, a widow. She'd murdered her 2 children by giving them each a cup of poison milk before bed. Then she'd hanged herself. The article included a photo of the farmhouse's living room with a woman's body hanging from a beam. Beneath her, knocked over, was that old wooden chair, placed exactly in the center of the room. Well, I hope you guys enjoyed your creepypastas. For those of you who did not get yours read, I will read them on the next go-round, which will be here in the next day or two. So, I'll see you fine folks on the flip side.